Blog Talk Radio.
Yo, everybody, come get your bounce on, get your bounce on, get your bounce on. Don't be cute with it, you gotta get, come on. Fifth ward, fourth ward. Come on, sing it.
Good evening, everyone. I'd like to thank you once again for joining us for another episode of Conversations with Gail, with inspirational speaker and tonight's hostess, Gail Butler. Through Conversations with Gail, also known as CWG, we aim to improve mindsets and attitudes that are self-defeating and destructive. CWG looks forward to presenting a host of subjects such as relationship enrichment, achieving greater intimacy, effective communication, urban intellect, current events, making and implementing positive changes in lifestyles, and so much more. So without hesitation, I'm going to get right to it and present philanthropist, playwright, inspirational speaker, and of course, my favorite title, tonight's hostess, Gail Butler.
Good evening. Thanks for tuning in to Conversations with Gail. I missed you guys. Last week I was battling that horrible cold, flu, whatever is going around. So many people are still recovering from that. I hope if anyone has that they are doing better. Please drink plenty of fluids and get a lot of rest. I'm glad you are tuning in to www.blogtalkradio.com. Victorious Radio Communications. As my lovely executive producer has told you, I am your host, Gail Butler, and you know what time it is, people. This is the wind down time. So, would you have your drink of choice tonight? I'm just doing water, just trying to still get this mucus and mess out of me, so I'm just drinking water today. If you have a comment or a question, please call in. The discussion line is 347 855-8877. Press the number 1 on your phone when you want to make a comment or you have a question. This is an open forum, so I welcome your comments. If you want to remain anonymous, your privacy will be respected. If you are not comfortable with that, please just comment on the chat link, www.blogtalkradio.com/Victorious Radio Communications. You can also send me any questions to my email address, convowithgail@gmail.com, or like my Facebook page, Conversations with Gail. Invite your friends to like my Facebook page, Conversations with Gail, and leave a message. As I've always tell you, I will do my best to answer your questions. If not live, I will respond on my Facebook page. So tonight, we are going to be finishing up our Black History Month celebration. I wasn't able to finish it up last week, so we're going to finish this up tonight, our series on Black History Month. we have discussed strength, perseverance, and being a conqueror. In the first slave narrative composed by the African-American female author Harriet Jacobs, Incidents in the Life of a Slave Girl, Jacobs sheds light on the horrors of slavery from a female perspective, while also exposing the sexual exploitation of slave masters. Her story begins when her mistress, described as a kind and considerate person, dies. Harriet recounts a promise which was made by her mistress to her mother that she will receive her freedom upon the death of her mistress. Harriet Jacob writes, "After a brief period of suspense, the will of my mistress was read, and we learned she had bequeathed me to her niece, a child of 5 years old. So vanished our hopes. My mistress had taught me the precepts of God's word, 'Thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself.' But I was I was her slave, and I suppose she would not recognize me as her neighbor." I would give much to blot out from my memory that one great wrong. I loved my mistress, and looking back on the happy days I spent with her, I try to think with less bitterness of this act of injustice while I was with her. She taught me to read and spell, and for this privilege, which so rarely falls to the lot of a slave, I bless her memory. This passage describes Harriet's story and understanding of the biblical passage we hear today in James and throughout Bible, focusing on loving our neighbor. It is the passage Harriet probably heard most of her enslaved life. It is also a passage where Harriet recognizes the differences in biblical interpretation. You see, her mistress did not include a slave in her biblical concept of what was meant to be a good neighbor. Harriet understood this concept of neighbor probably from passages read to her from Leviticus and the Gospels. These are probably passages that were taught to her by her very own mistress. These are passages she probably based her hopes and dreams upon. This concept of loving your neighbor as yourself probably enabled Harriet to endure the cruelty of her slave master, who constantly confronted her with sexual advances. It was a passage that provided visions of a new future, visions of freedom and family. The premise of loving your neighbor for Harriet was a promise of new life, now shattered through the reading of her mistress's will, where slave was not embraced as her neighbor. But Harriet still lived on the promises of the scriptures that if the poor, the downtrodden, and the least of these were to be considered neighbor, surely a young slave girl could be as well. Can we love our neighbors as ourselves after being treated with such degradation? This is a question that I have often asked myself. How can I get past the years of hate thrown at family and friends, all based on the color of their skin? I'm an advocate for removing baggage and moving forward. Is holding on to my anger and bitterness to the racist acts that have been done against family and friends and myself, how can I move forward if I'm holding on to the anger? And, you know, a lot of us are still, we walk around, it's the man. The man is, it's his fault. That's why I have all these problems. And we're holding on to that anger. But in reality, that's a part of baggage that we have to let go. We can't look at, you know, a lot of us may look at, I've never watched the movie 12 Years a Slave, and that's because a lot of those movies, it really just takes me to a different place. So I choose not to watch it, and some people, they can watch it with no problems. I do want to see that movie, but I have to make sure that I am at a good space when I do watch it, because I don't want to start harboring unnecessary anger and evil towards a people that had nothing to do with at that time what happened with the movie 12 Years a Slave. So we all have to think back. Are we harboring anger and bitterness towards a race of people because of racist acts? The key is to allow love and peace to exist in our world. It resides in each of us. Can you believe that we all have love and peace, and it does reside in each of us, and we have to be willing to open it up and share it with others? It seems so often today we look at others and wonder what they may want from us or what their agenda really is all about. And then we move into protection mode. And we all know we're all, I think this world has come into a world where we are so, we all, everybody has their guard up. Everybody is just walking around with layers and layers and layers of walls. Nobody wants to be hurt. Nobody wants to be. We're just so afraid of getting close to people. We'll do something crazy or something out of the norm. Some people will say, what is it, adventurous. We'll do something adventurous. We'll go on roller coasters. We'll do this. We'll do that. Anything kind of scary. But something that is the most easiest thing to do, and that is getting close to people and getting to know different people, we will shun away. And the first thing that so many people say is, I don't like people. I don't like getting close to people. That don't sound cute. It doesn't make you sound smart. It just shows that you have a fear and you're afraid of getting close because you know that you're afraid of a person really seeing you for who you are and they may not like you and your feelings will be hurt. That's why we have all those walls up. It isn't because you don't like people or you don't want to get close. You're afraid. And once you admit your fears that you don't want a person to start looking at you and see who you are, and that means that they have to either like you or not like you, and you don't want to deal with that, so you put your walls up. And so many of us are walking around, and you can see it in the faces in protection mode. When you speak to a person, a lot of people look at you. If you say hello, go into an elevator in an office, and you say good morning, they will look at you like you're crazy because they're not, some people just aren't ready to, that is too much opening up. Or the good one is, I'm not a morning person. I'm not a morning person either. I do need my coffee. But there's a difference from being a morning person and being rude. And when a person says good morning, it's nothing wrong with saying good morning and going on about your day. But being rude because you want to hide behind, that's a wall, hide behind that wall. Well, I'm not a morning person, so I don't want no one to talk to me till after I had my coffee. That's me being rude. So if I can use that as that wall, then that's my excuse. So I could just say, well, you know, that's just me. I haven't had my coffee. Don't say nothing. There's nothing wrong with saying good morning. So we put this protection mode around us. And we live in a world that is so easily to have that those walls, the protection mode, that we are so easily blinded from truth and allow laws to mandate the very core of the treatment of human life. And as we keep our blinders tightly fastened, our distrust of the stranger grows, our attitudes spill out into the world to add to its distrust, while continuing to make the world a less inviting place. But the good news is that while I'm still dreaming and hoping and having faith in a different type of world, and I hope you are too, I still believe there is a world where we can live in, which comes from hard work and discipline, from lessons learned from our ancestors, from treating others as we want to be treated. I still dream that there is a world where love for others exists and it prevails over envy, power, and hate. I dream of a world where love can make room for the other. But this type of world is going to cost us something. this type of world is going to have to, you're going to have to put those walls down. You're going to have to open up. And I know that it's hard to be open up. And I'm not saying, some people get confused when you say you have to open up. I'm not saying that you have to go and you spill all of your personal business. You are, everyone is entitled to their privacy. But I am saying when you open up, it's just allowing yourself to make new friendships, allowing yourself to make friends and getting to know people that you would never, ever, ever, ever in your life get to know because you always had those walls placed around you. And African Americans, we are known, to me, I believe, we are the wall bearers. We got more walls around us. It is crazy. As soon as somebody knocked one down, you just threw up 20 more. And then we're wondering, well, why can't we get this business started? Well, why can't we get that? Well, why can't I get in touch with this person? Because in order to build these relationships, you have to be able to remove walls. Those walls have to be gone. You have to be able to get out there, and it's beyond what a lot of people will say, well, you have to be in hustle mode. It's beyond being in hustle mode. It's grown-up mode. You have to remove those walls and be like, you know what? If this is what I want, I got to get out there and do it. And that means that I have to dance like no one's watching. And who cares what they think if you are off tune? You are doing what you have to do to get where you want to get. And that means, first thing, we got to let go of those walls and not think, oh, they're not going to talk to me because I'm African American. Give it a chance. You never, ever know. Oh, excuse me. It is going to demand that some tables are turned over in the temples and a tenacity to never rest until all humanity is respected and cared for. As I have said in the past couple of weeks, that we cannot dwell on the past. We have to learn from our past and move forward, and that is in all things, in relationships, in dealing with racism in our color and our culture and our family. You have to learn from your past and move forward. Black history is not just about all the bad times we've been through. It is about integrity, leadership, and determination. It is about showing your true character, how a person deals with the circumstances of life tells you many things about his or her character. Crisis does not necessarily make character. And you know, we live off saying, well, I've dealt with this. I'm strong because I was in this type of relationship. I'm strong because I stayed with somebody that beat the hell out of me for 20 years. That doesn't mean that you have good character. It just means that you are very, I ain't going to say it. It just means that you're a different breed. That's all I'm going to say. But a lot of us, that's what our stamp is. And women, we do this. Our stamp is, I am a single mother. So that means I'm this, blah, blah. Just because all single mothers aren't good mothers. Yes, I said it. All fathers are not dead dads. Yes, I'm saying that. But a lot of us, we stamp that. You think because, oh, I'm a single mother and I did this and I worked 10 jobs and I did this and I did that. Well, as a mother, when you decide to have a child, there are certain things that you have decided that you're going to do. It don't make you any better than the next woman that has got out there and did what she had to do and didn't whine and cry about it. And really, ladies, if we look back at our grandmothers and our mothers, those ladies that have been doing this, raising children, ain't none of them do all that harping and need a whole bunch of praise or accolades until the single women now came along. They act like they done something. A lot of, and I don't care if you're offended, but I look at my grandmother raised 11 kids, had them. She had 11. One grandmother had 12. And they raised all of their children. plus grandchildren. See, those women, and not once can I ever remember hearing my grandmothers with these big, I raise my kids. Like, we need, oh goodness, Mother's Day, you'll see it. I'm a single mother, and I've done this, and I've done that. That's what a mother does. That's what I'm putting on my cape. You putting on your cape? No, tell me how it is when a woman got to take care of 12 kids, plus grandchildren, plus a husband. Cook, feed all of them. Please explain to me. Then, when you can do all of that, then tell me about a cape. Because for real, we are not as strong as we think we are. And we use those badges like we supposed to get badges of honor or that makes us good, a good person, and it doesn't. Crisis does not make character. Because you see a lot of people that have gone through and had crisis, and they are some not very good people. But crisis does reveal character. And I will tell anybody, if you really want to see if someone is the good person that you should have in your life or in a relationship, friendship, see how they act when a crisis comes. You learn so much on how a person can handle themselves when a crisis. If they are a victim, if they always crying and they have to be the victim during a crisis, you better run. Because that is a person that is never, ever, ever going to accept responsibility on anything. All they're looking for is somebody to give them kudos and praise and accolades. So remember this, people. Crisis does not necessarily make a character, but it certainly does reveal it. So when you see a person going through a crisis and you see their actions, believe that is their character. That is their character. Also, adversity makes a person choose one of two paths, character or compromise. Every time a person chooses character, they grow stronger. Character is the foundation on which a person builds his or her life. It also begins with character because relationships operate on the basis of trust. Character communicates credibility, harnesses respect, creates consistency, and earns trust. According to John Maxwell, again, Black History Month is a time to reach the next generation and help shape their character. So many of us have forgotten that's what we have lacked. We have done everything under the sun. We have made sure that our youth have trying to give them job skills. We're trying to do, what else is it? Job skills, telling them you got to go to college, you have to do this. But if you have not instilled their character is not fixed, and their character is not with respect, consistency, trusting, I don't care what they do, if your character sucks, you could be rich and still have sucky character. If you don't believe me, look at Donald Trump. You can be poor. You're just a poor person with a nasty character. We have got to get back into teaching and putting into our children that building their character, shaping their character, because character will take you a long way. Character integrity will make a person say, I'll look out for them. I see that they're serious about starting their business. They are a good character. They are a good person. But they will see you make him play the game and you know how to run your mouth and know how to talk good, but your character will always seep. That character will be shown. I promise you, it will be shown. Not only is Black History Month a time to reach and inspire the next generation, it is also a time to recommit to making this world a better place. And I know it sounds cliche-ish and, oh, I have a dream, but in order, when I say the world, I'm going to say your sphere of influence. A lot of people take it as, I mean, the whole world. But I believe if it starts with one. If I am doing all that I can to influence my sphere of influence, and they learn from me, and they do their sphere of influence, and so on and so on, and everyone's doing the same, you are building a better place. But it starts with you. It starts with me. We can make it a better place. This is a time to recommit and go into our sphere of influence, go into the world and show them we are equal. We can have the same rights and we can achieve at the same level. As African Americans, we have such a rich history of making our communities, cities, and world a better place. Some believe that Black History Month is no longer needed. I disagree. Why? Our history did not begin with slavery. Our history began thousands of years ago. We come from kings and queens. This is not lies. This is real. We come from kings and queens. Why would we only stop our history at slavery? We can go further. And we should go further. But a lot of us, that's all we think about Black history. Okay, well, we didn't study about Martin Luther King, Malcolm X, Rosa Parks, and that's it. It's more. We were not always slaves, unlearned, and in the shadows and underachievers. So, if you have a comment or a question, please call in. The discussion line is 347-855-8877. Press the number 1 on your phone when you want to make a comment or have a question. This is an open forum, so I welcome your comments. If you want to remain anonymous, your privacy will be respected. Excuse me. If you are not comfortable with that, please comment on the chat link, www.blogtalkradio.com/Victorious Radio Communications. You can also send me any questions to my email address, convowithgail@gmail.com, or like my Facebook page, Conversations with Gail. Leave a message, and I will do my best to answer all questions. If not live, I will respond on my Facebook page. So, family, we are back again. So now, we're going to delve in a little deeper into Black family love. So like I've said, I know all of you noticed that my topics will switch. Some days I'll say I'm going to be talking about this. And when I start working on my show, my mind just goes, I'm like, oh no, I want to talk about this too. So I'm trying to squeeze everything in tonight for Black history. So we're going to delve deeper into the Black family love. Many of us have been taught that our families were torn apart during slavery, which majority of this is true. Yes, you did have mothers and fathers ripped apart, but there were others, such as Reverend Thomas Love. Here is a little bit about Reverend Love. When he was a young boy, the Reverend Thomas was sold away from his family. A few years later, he was reunited with his family, only to be sold away from his parents and siblings once again. The slavers attempted to justify this horrific treatment by claiming that the Black family did not have the same sense of closeness as the white family, which was a bold-faced lie. Listen to Reverend Jones' testimony that in spite of being separated repeatedly, the Black family retained their love and unity. I can testify from my own painful experience to the deep and fond affection which the slave cherishes in his heart for his home and his dear ones. We have no other tie to link us to the human family, but our fervent love for those who are with us and of us and relations of sympathy and devotedness in wrongs and wretchedness. This was from Reverend Thomas. We learned from Reverend Thomas that hardships don't make it too make it too hard to love. What about us and our families? What about our Black families? Are we able to love during the hardships? And a lot of us can't. We don't have the thick skin that a lot of families dealt with years ago, gone by, because that's all they had. And irregardless of where they were, they always knew they had home. Now we have gotten to a place that we are so separated from the bond and the connection that Black family had that some of us right now cannot think of a place that they can truly say, if I need to go home, I can go home. We think we're talking about, oh, I can go down the street and put the key in and I'm home. No. It's, to me, I think, like for me, I say my hometown, I wasn't born there, but my hometown is St. Mary's County, where my parents were born. When I go to St. Mary's County, to me, that's home. That's home. That's home. That's where my grandparents, they were raised. My parents, they were raised. So that is home for me. Now, I think we all should have that place that we can say is home. Do your children know that if anything was to happen, do they have a place that they have as solitude and say, I could come home? A lot of us have gotten so caught up, and I'm about to really step on some toes right now, and I really don't care. Y'all should already know this by now. But a lot of you so caught up on throwing your kids out the house when they turn 18, that's why your children don't know what home is. That's why you have adults that are so selfish, and it's mine. I got mine. I worked hard for mine. I've been out on my own. Like, that's a badge of honor. I've been out on my own for ever since I was such and such. So you've been out on your own struggling, because it's not hard. It's not easy. It's not easy out here. So you throwing them out there so they can struggle, what, struggle like you did? My father always said, why am I going to send you out there to the wolves and you have a home? But so many of us, Black families, because we're the only ones that do this. Oh, that's our battle cry. When they get 18, they getting out my house. They getting out my house. And ain't none of y'all, no parent can tell me, how do you expect your child to pay rent in the DMV area? And they are not coming out of college making six figures like 10, 12 years ago. Some of them are just making minimum wage. So if they're just making minimum wage, it is no way they can afford an apartment in a decent area starting at $14.50 a month. Or no, and we don't do utilities included. That's not happening. Plus, they got to pay all their utilities. Please tell me what's going on. How is that possible? But a lot of you parents, y'all the first ones screaming it. White parents don't do this. Spanish parents don't. They don't do that. Their children go to college, they come back home, and they allow them to pay their bills off. Why? Pay their student loans off. Why, pray tell? Because 9 times out of 10, these parents have already saved up money for their children. So when their kids go purchase homes, they are already getting nice, pretty down payments to put down on them, and they don't have no bills. What do we have? We have a load of Black children, Black adults with student loans out the yin-yang, with debt out the yin-yang, all for the sake of a parent that had to say, my child got to get out of my house at 18. And here comes Sally and Becky, and then we mad when Sally and Becky at 35 got their own home, they got whatever they want. Well, how did they get that? I'm still trying to pay my loans off. Why? See, a lot of times we let go of that family bond all for the sake of wanting to keep up with the Joneses, not realizing that the Joneses got just as much debt as the Bakers. Just something to think about. And if you look at the Spanish families. They don't do that, African families. They don't do that. They look out for each other. When one moves up, another one moves up. That's family bond. And years ago, we were like that. Years ago, when African Americans moved from the South and migrated to the city, if it was somebody that had a home in the city, they let family live with them until they could get their own. Once they did that, they got their own place. Somebody else from down south that wanted to come up and wanted to work, they let them come and they stayed with them. Now, let somebody attempt to call anybody. I know anybody listening to me. Some of you wouldn't even answer the phone. You'd be so, oh, no, they ain't coming to my house. They ain't coming to my house. Then you say that, as soon as you're down and out, first thing you say is, my family don't do nothing for me. Well, you don't do nothing for your own. Karma is real. If you're not willing to help somebody else, what make you think that somebody is going to open a door for you when you're down and out? It doesn't work that way, people. And in order for us to build family bond, we got to get better. And that means family loyalty. So think about it. Do your children have a place that when they think about it, they can say, I can go home? And that's one thing I have always, I'm blessed to say that, and I don't care. If anything, if I ever need anything, when I was in Atlanta and I was going through it, my mom was like, you come home. You don't never have to be stuck anywhere and be miserable. You can come home. And to be able to have that is a blessing. And a lot of people feel a badge of honor is, I'm doing this and I'm struggling. That is not a badge of honor for me. But to have a place that I know that I have that comfort, I have that family bonding, and they said, she says, come home. When you can embrace that, to have your children to have that, that is awesome. So do your children have a place that they know that no matter what happens, if they just need a place just to get my mind right, they can say, I can go home. Do your daughters have a place? Or are they stuck with men that got to beat them upside the head, men that do whatever they want to do, but they can't go home because you have basically let the world know they got to get the hell out your house at 18. But do they have a place in their heart that they know, I can come to my mother's, I can go to my father's? Something to think about. When tough times come and tensions mount, do we excuse our inexcusable behaviors toward one another because it's just too hard to love? And a lot of us, we don't want to face hardships with family or family issues, and so we just move on. But the sad part about one thing I am learning as I'm getting older and loving, you have to learn to even love the ones that get on your ever-loving nerves. You have to learn to love people that you truly don't like. And I'm not saying love them in goo goo gaga, whatever, but learning to love from a distance is a beautiful thing. Learning to love and be respectful from a distance is a learning process, and a lot of us don't know that. We still walk around with our face tied up at somebody that they forgot why you mad at them, and really probably 9 out of 10 could care less. But you still talking about, well, I don't like that child. I remember when out 10 years ago she did such and such. Get over yourself. And this is family. Faced with unimaginable troubles, trials, and tribulations, the Black family maintained its affection, love, sympathy, and devotion. And that's what we've lost. Their Black family legacy teaches us that hardships do not make it too hard to love. We have to get back to leaving family legacies to our children. And a part of a family legacy, people, is character. So many people in 2016 have no family legacy. They have no idea first how to continue a conversation with family, more so have a legacy. I've heard a minister say one day that don't count on any, he told his children, don't count on any inheritance from him. He's using up every dollar while he's still alive.
many people were offended when they heard him say this. How could he say that? How could he? You're supposed to leave your children. Kids, get over yourself. No parent is supposed to leave you one penny. That's why you have so many people, when a parent dies, act like complete lunatics because they think they are owed a dollar. You are not owed nothing. Your parents worked for all that they had. You ain't go to their job and do their job. You don't. You are not owed their retirement. You are not owed jack. Now, if they decide to give you, that's a blessing. But a lot of y'all probably already try and count your parents' insurance policies. Well, what you gonna spend? But your parent is not. They don't have to give you jack. Some of y'all don't even deserve it. You don't even call your mom or your daddy. And you would, and when soon as they shut their eyes, half of you would be running looking for an insurance policy, but can't even pick up a phone and call them and say, how you doing? How are things going? But you look for that insurance policy and be ready to fight, mad at the world because you didn't get $5. It's not that serious, because for real, when you get it in your head, you didn't go to work for that. You didn't work for that. They worked for that. What they decide to do with their money is up to them. And I know a whole lot of you don't like that one, but think about it. It's true, because I know don't nobody go to work for me but me. I didn't go to work for my mother. So remember that. They do not owe you jack, especially some of you that won't even go visit the poor people. And if you don't believe it, it's people have family members now sitting in a nursing home. They ain't seen their parents since Christmas. Here it is, March. And when you went Christmas, you was there for 5 minutes and left. But your mama ain't leave you when you was a baby. She had to take your little snotty nose somewhere, drag you around. Now, many people, because they believe that leaving an inheritance is what a parent is supposed to do, you have many people right now working themselves to death wanting to leave their seed an inheritance. Then you have parents who have worked tirelessly ensuring that their children will have businesses to run once they have passed on, and the children have the business sense of a worm. That's where we get back to, are we instilling character into our children? Because while the parents working to leave all the material things to their child, they forgot about teaching them the most important parts: character, integrity, honesty, loyalty. That's the important part of a legacy. That's not the money, because materialistic things can be gone. I've seen parents that have left money and businesses, and they might have lasted 2 years. Parents that have worked tirelessly to build their businesses. And it's shameful. Why? It's shameful because, for one, the child never really paid attention or learned business. They just assumed they were going to get it and they were going to just be living the life of Riley, never realizing that all that works comes behind businesses is work, that the parent had to work for these businesses. They had to build them. What legacy has been left for you, your parents or grandparents or other significant adults in your lives? Were you gifted with resources that you treasure or that have made your life better? Were you bestowed with qualities and characteristics that have made your life better, richer, fuller? We could all tell of the difficult and painful side of legacies. And legacies, some people have a legacy of generational alcoholism. I mean, that's a part of a legacy, too. It can be broken. Some people call those generational curses, but I say that's a legacy. Because, you know, have you ever seen those families, and you'll hear, well, in small towns, they say, well, they're known to be alcoholics. That's a heck of a legacy for a family to have. But there are families like that. Or they'll say, oh, they're known for this. When it goes generation, 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 and that's, I don't know why we put those names on people and we do that, but that's kind of the bad part of the legacy. But we must never let those sad and even sinister legacies of inheritance be the last word on what we have received from our forefathers, our ancestors. We must choose, rather, to receive and live out the legacies that give life, legacies of faith, hope, and love, legacies which inform, inspire, and empower. But this is only part of the task. Each day, my friends, we are also challenged to decide what legacy we will leave those around us and those who are watching us and following us. You see, each moment of our lives, we are all crafting the legacy we will leave behind. And I know a lot of you ain't never thought about that. That's why you should be doing that, live my life to the fullest. Because do you want your legacy to be is that I was just complacent and ain't never do nothing, ain't never tried nothing, never did nothing new? You want to be your legacy to be, you know what, she went out there, even if she failed, she still tried. She never gave up. She always kept moving. Every day, every hour, every second, every minute, whatever choice we make, we are building our legacy. And a whole lot of us have not really thought like that, but we are walking our legacy right now, right now. Whatever you're doing, whatever you did today, was that a part of your legacy, something that you would want to be seen? That which consumes the most amount of our time, our energy, our passion, and our resources will be that which we leave behind to those who come after us, whether by blood or by simply being the future generations of this community, this world, our sphere of influence. For families to survive, love is necessary and crucial. It may be cliche, but what the world needs, we do need love, and we have to love each other. What our families need is love. From a distance, the world sees a large, established group of African-American people gathered together at family reunions, at different functions, at churches, and we're sharing the pleasant conversations, and we're having fun and trying to enjoy each other's company. But beneath the surface, we are a community, a family, spiraling out of control with a generation of children who are disrespectful, who have no self-respect, no self-worth, and they are willing to do anything and be with anyone just to say they are loved. From a distance, we gather using elusive conversation about, oh, I love my brother and my sister, I love, we like to say that, throw the word around nicely, but in reality, many of the lives we lead are spiraling out of control because we are struggling with love, because we have not realized that we are walking our legacy now. And how do we learn to love? By first learning to love yourselves with the flaws, the thorns, and all of its imperfections. Loving yourself is learning to have dignity and demanding respect. That as we go through life, we are teaching our children and ourselves. We can be called many disrespectful names, but what we will answer to is all that matters. We will learn dignity, and we in the black community must look at ourselves and understand our own responsibilities. Family, we are almost okay. Not almost. I had to look at the time. I apologize. It is time that we overcome. We cannot accept the current state of affairs. We must realize and believe that for all the external hassles we face, we are not helpless. We can overcome the odds and succeed in spite of the obstacles, and we must try. We can never give up. Despite the fact that racial discrimination has not been eliminated, black strength lies in the resolve to keep on keeping on, never quit, never give up, and never yield to the role of cooperative victimization. For African Americans to hold their heads high, even today, means getting rid of internal feelings of being inferior. Always remember, family, we are worthy. We have got to know our worth and show it at all times. Wearing your pants hanging off your tail is not showing worth, fellas. That's showing that you like to show your underwear. For the last part, I'm going to just give this little section to the ladies. And ladies, we have to show our worth. We have to know our worth. You know your worth. You know what you bring to the table. Stand firm on that. Be strong on that. Stop settling for less because you don't think you deserve it. We have got to start being women of substance so our little girls can see what a woman of substance is. A woman of substance is a woman of power, a woman of positive influence, and a woman of meaning. To be branded a woman of substance is one of the greatest compliments one can give a woman that wants to be influential, wants to be an influential female. Embrace your individuality and be happy the way you are. The pressure put on African-American women today in today's society is immense. And I admire any woman out here who doesn't let the high demands and expectations get them down. In my experience, I have learned that we as women should not let the likes of perfected images or criticism affect us. It has come as such a relief to me to realize that being different and imperfect is far more interesting than being a perfect person. Ladies, stop comparing yourselves. Women that have natural hair, stop thinking that you are a better woman than a woman that wants to wear a weave or wants to rock a wig. We are all women. We all have the same struggles. Stop thinking you have gotten the golden rule and that you're prettier because you decided to go natural. Because I'm going to be honest, and I'm sure you ain't going to like this. Some of you that went natural might need to put the wig back on. Some of you that got the wig on might need to go natural. It's all in what fits you. But do not think that you are better than another woman because you have chosen to wear, go natural, or think you're a better woman because you have chosen to have a wig or to you put weave in your hair. We are all the same. None of us are no better. We are all beautiful. We all are unique. We are all designers original. God made us different. He did not make us all to be the same. And once we all get that through our thick heads, we will be so much better off. So, so much better off. Because I could not see a world where all of us were size threes. We would be some boring people where everybody was a size three. Everybody had long hair. Boy, that would be boring. And it would be very ugly. Because who wants to all look the same? Even if it was a world where all women were size 14s. We are different for a reason. Remember that. You are a designer's original. God made you just the way he wanted to be you to be made. Now, you want to do all the extra stuff, then you need to discuss that between you and God. But get out of that perfect thought that you have to have this perfect look. Do what looks best for you. what looks good on you, you rock it till the wheels fall off. And that means you, if you want to switch up until you figure out what looks good for you, switch it up. But don't ever be afraid or feel that you're better. That's the biggest problem. We have too many women, especially with this natural and weave, like that's the new badge of honor. Well, I'm natural. I've been natural for 10 years. Baby, if you put one drop of a chemical in your head, you are not natural. If you put oil in your hair, that's not natural. Natural is absolutely nothing. That's natural for me. So once you start putting any chemicals, if you dye your hair, that's not natural, ladies. That's a chemical. And dye is strong. And please don't come sending me no message talking about, well, I use a natural dye. It's a dye. Natural go mean go gray. Gail ain't doing it. So that's what natural is. Natural is let your hair go completely white. Now, when I start seeing, and I don't mean dye it white, gradually let it go white. So that's pieces of white hair white there. When I see y'all doing that, then I say, yep, they natural. But until you stop putting chemicals, all types of chemicals, you're not truly a true natural. And women that wear weave, stop doing that, oh, you have the long flowing hair, that makes you better than, no. We are all the same. All the same. All right, I hope you guys have enjoyed my series on Black History Month. And I am coming back next week stronger than ever, feeling better. And my topic is stop praying for Boaz. There is no Boaz. We're going to finally put to rest about Boaz. I am so sick and tired of hearing y'all females screaming, I'm praying for my Boaz. That's why you by yourself, because you praying for Boaz. And I'm going to tell you why next week, same time, same channel. Bye.
Oh, my goodness. Peace.